The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. We are today talking about the challenges of doing columns. Specifically, why you should never do a Corinthian column, right, yeah. Brent?
The challenge of if you are really trying to build to the past, right, how hard it is, because I'm going to walk you through how hard this was for us to get right. Basically, there's a building at Oxford University that I took a picture of, you know, 20 years ago. It's called the Radcliffe Camera. Radcliffe was the wealthy donor, and he donated money for a library at Oxford University. This is 1730, probably 1720, I think, maybe 1750, early 1700s. James Gibb, who is an English architect, designed this building. And so it's done in the Corinthian order.
From the Latin meaning room.
Okay.
Camera.
So it's not a huge building, and so but it is a private library. I haven't been inside, but I'd love to be. And so what I wanted to do, okay, in part of, like, Vossel's covered up with carvings right now, but he wasn't for a time. And so I was like, well, ever since he got here, I wanted him to carve a Corinthian capital. And one is just so freaking beautiful.
Unbelievable.
It's fantastic. And this is a order that is so screwed up today and is so hard to do that I've said before when we were going through other jobs, don't even do the Corinthian order. Don't even do it because it's just too hard. And in our day and age, trying to get it right is just, it's difficult. And case in point, how hard this one was. So this is walnut, okay? I wanted to do it in a stained grade wood, and I wanted an example, a brass ring, for lack of a better thing, of this is what we're trying to attain, and this is what we're trying to do. So one is drawing it to scale, okay? Drawing it to the proper scale and proportion. And I can't remember exactly the scale we used to compare to the building. I think it's 25% of what the size is. But what you're seeing here is then you're basically looking at this drawing here. And this is from a William Payne book, but it shows the Corinthian order. You got an attic base. Okay, so an attic base is a base that has two toraces with a cavetto in between. And then you're seeing the lower part of the column, and then it breaks, and then you see the upper part of the column. Okay,
breaks where the entasis, the whole body of the column. You're
expressing and showing the entasis that happens in the column. That's why there's the break there.
Okay.
And so we were thinking about even cutting this and putting a piece of acrylic or something in there, something clear to show that there's a break. My wife, I showed this to my wife, and she's like, what am I looking at? I don't get it. And so I'm realizing that because I've been looking at these pattern books like this for years, I know exactly what I'm looking at, but no one else does. So we're trying to copy this. And this is probably a year. No, it couldn't be that long.
To be clear.
8 months? Yeah.
You're trying to copy this. That is obviously, like, the column holds up a roof or a bay or something. So this would be continued off to the roof?
Correct. So this is basically the entablature that wraps around the room.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is your architrave, your frieze, and your cornice. And it's a—
wait, will you show me again? I couldn't see your hand.
Architrave, frieze, and then cornice.
Awesome.
Okay. And the cornice is, you got a bed mold. Okay. Typically with the dental in here.
Coming later?
No, because on the camera, even though they've got dentals here, on the camera there aren't dentals.
Hmm.
Okay. And then you've got a carved modillions, brackets, and then there'll be more carving up here. Okay. So we are expressing, right? We're trying to express this this building. Now, the other thing that happens is that there are examples of columns that support arches that spring off the top of here where this full entablature is shown. So one, I'm trying to show the beauty of the order, okay, so that when we're looking at this thing and, you know, that you're looking at the column, the entablature, and the proportions of all this and how this goes together. One, it's a wow, right? It's just like, dang, right? And so there's actually rosettes that'll go in here that'll get carved, which is what you're seeing there.
Right there.
Okay. And so now they've actually carved the little cavetto that goes around the inside of that little panel, but we're not doing that, right? And so.
Too hard.
No, it's not that it's too hard. It's not expressed at the Radcliffe Cameras. Okay, so cool. this is a model for me for one of my favorite buildings, right?
Yeah.
But it's also a model of how to build and going to the past, because I just did actually it's on Instagram today. There's a Wall Street Journal house, $24 million.
I saw that.
It's the Tahiri house, okay?
The Lambeau house?
Yeah. They have a Lamborghini Countach in front of the house.
Is that a type of Lamborghini?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a typical Lamborghini that's just the old type. It's just like, it's clear, okay, because it's kind of a McMansion-y looking thing. And it's not really any style. It's just mixed match of styles. And it's clear that they put this Lamborghini in the driveway, kind of to distract the eye, but also wanted to be cool by association, right? And so.
You can't buy taste.
It's just like, they knew they didn't get their house right. And they're like, I think we might want to put a cool car in the front order to make people think the house is worth more than it is. Like, this is the pinnacle and look at my car, right? As opposed to just having great architecture.
Yeah.
So, but their columns, their Corinthian columns are a mess. It looked like an ear of broccoli. I mean, it's just this spreads out. It's too big. It's not the right size. And you get into all these geeky things like our capital springs out of this astragal, okay? It comes out from inside of that. Theirs actually sits like 2 inches outside of it and then goes way out. So the parts and proportions aren't right. And so the one reason in my mind that classicism gets such a bad rap today is because it's practiced so poorly.
Mm-hmm. It's done well.
It's just... No. It's done so bad that people are just like, yeah, I don't want that. That's it's in bad taste. It looks ugly. No one likes that. And so, but when you do it right, okay.
Because they're seeing the cheap version of it.
They're seeing the cheap version of it, right? And so they see ugly carvings, they see bad classicism, and they go, yeah, I don't want that. The entablature in that house is a joke. Mm-hmm. I mean, these huge brackets, and it's just.
So what was the. You had mentioned, because I pointed this out when I got here, like, that thing is crazy. But you were saying, like, even for us at, you know, your team at Whole Millwork, like, it was difficult.
So a couple things happened. Like, if you look at this drawing right there, okay, look at the plinth there, okay? So when we handed it to our craftsmen, they turned the plinth round, okay? There you can't really tell... unless you know, but the plinth is always square, okay? It's not round. And so the first mistake we made was that this was turned instead of square, okay? So the first problem was it was just, you know, not done right. Second thing is that our torus was too big. This turning did not turn out right. These moldings were the wrong size. And part of that happened because... see the three steps here, four mm-hmm. steps?
Mm-hmm.
There's only two steps at the Radcliffe camera. So our architect was looking at this, not at the actual building. And if I'm trying to do a representation of that building, this, the way it's expressed at that building is different than the way even Gibbs drew it.
So did you have to build this multiple times?
Yes.
I have the scraps?
The other thing that happened is because we, on the layout, they built this top of this thing and the brackets didn't fit. Okay. So the brackets were sticking out this far. And so the plans and proportion of trying to pull all this thing together so that it laid out right, would be easy, but it wasn't. It was really hard. And it threw everybody. And so we'd have these meetings. Well, wait, what's not right? And we pull the pictures down. We go, well, that's not right. Well, wait, what's going on here? Wait, oh my gosh, that should be square.
Are you like getting calipers and like going on each one of these? Or not really?
No, but in hindsight, maybe we should have, right? Mm.
I'm actually shocked.
Isn't this like you can follow all of this?
Yes, and so we would think that we would follow, especially because we have James Gibbs' book right here.
Yeah.
And you go, well, he drew it this way. Surely they produced it that way in the building.
But they didn't.
They didn't. Now, why is that? Is that because...
That's stereotomy, by the way.
I was just looking at a book in there, and I just pulled out a stair thing. And goes, yeah, there it is, right there, in these old pattern books. Isn't that crazy?
So oh, the, Pat saw it.
Yeah, Pat saw it, and I go, "Is that it?" And he goes, "That's it, right there."
This whole time,
it's probably in this book too. Anyway, the
that's so
well, how accurate then would you say this one is?
Well, so what happened? Why is James Good's pattern book here not match the Radcliffe camera? Okay, was it the craftsman on site? Was it the material that didn't allow it?
Is both. This the pattern that they took for the camera, or like did James take this from like
what? Well, James wrote this book.
I know, but why? I guess why would it match?
Well, because he did a pattern book, drew it all out, made sure all the proportions and everything
for that building.
Based off of that building, or just based off of the order? Because that's where I'm like, well, that's where the differentiating.
He drew this out,
uh-huh.
And then he goes to design the Radcliffe camera,
based off of his designs.
You would think.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And so, why didn't it match?
I think it was probably materials and craftsmen.
Craftsmen, right?
Yeah.
Being on the job, and I think you know
because we're always doing that.
You're always having to change something on the job, and you're changing stuff. Hey, that doesn't quite work. Mm. This doesn't fit. Hey, we made a mistake here. We're going to hide it this way, or whatever those things are. So his drawing did not match what was the building that we're trying to match. We're trying to copy. And so, anyway, it became this exercise that, you know, how long did it freaking take us?
So, six months
or 8 months to get to this point. And you're just like, why did it take us so freaking long?
I mean, that's pretty impressive, honestly. And like, well, I think while you were in your office, Vasil walked by and told us hi. And I said, hey, you know, that thing's awesome. He's like, oh, I only did this part of it. And we're like... Yeah, that's insane, you know?
That's the part we're impressed
with. That's what we're talking about.
But he's going to now carve these pieces, okay? And then the goal is that we would then get Cashy to make a plaster mold and do 20 of them and sell them, or 10 of them and sell them.
I would love to buy one of those.
Yeah, like, I would love to have one of these. And anyway, we did it. So it's a pet project.
What if you just do 20 of these? And sell those.
Yeah, I'm about to hit you.
What would you charge for something like that? Like 10 grand for that?
I think it's more than that. I think if you had Vossel's hours that he had in that thing, it's. I mean, he worked on that for probably 2 months.
I'd do 5 days. I could do this.
Well, you know, you know, if you're going to do this in a production sense, maybe you are roughing them out on the CNC and then hand carving the rest or something.
Because traditionally it would have been apprentices are roughing it out and the master's finishing it. And a lot of times they would do, I'm doing all the roses today. So a bunch of apprentices are getting all the roses ready. And
I mean, I think
that's how it's been explained to me with McIntyre's houses and everything.
That whole column thing is solid. It's all solid, right?
It's all solid.
Because normally columns are hollow, right?
Yeah. Well, it can be. So. This is all stone.
They're either poured or staved.
The original is stone.
Oh, on the building. Yeah, it's all exterior.
So it would have been stone.
Are you going to do something about this?
What would I do about that, Jackson?
I don't have to answer that
question. What? I don't get it.
Well, it's got ingrain pointing out. It's got ingrain pointing down, right? Can't tell the orientation of this wood, but would want to miter the ingrains against each other.
If it was an exterior piece and it was in wood.
You'd want to do it regardless.
Yeah, that's true.
You did it on the top with the Sima.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's all like
a
big mitered at a point.
That's how it should
that.
Be. Yeah.
And then you would, if it's
a... sitting here critiquing it. That's how it should be.
I'm working on a column restoration right now.
Thank you for calling that out. See what's happened?
I know, but
he's 1 year into North Bennett Street, and all of a sudden he's like...
Yeah, I'll just not talk about what I'm learning. Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I just won't say it next time. No, I'm not learning anything, actually. All
I'm
the
not
school
really
I'm
calling
paying for
Jackson
is nothing.
Out. I'm more of just like, it's just... I don't know. It's just funny. Yeah. That thing is spectacular.
Well, you would do it like the top. I actually don't know when you would do it like the top. We're kind of doing research right now and trying to figure out how we're supposed to miter ours together.
He's got a column on this job, and this kind of blew my mind. He goes, you know, typically columns that I'm familiar with, like Hartman Sanders was a famous column maker from the 1860s, 70s into about the 1940s. And they had this famous lock joint that basically snapped all the things together, wouldn't come apart. And so basically the staves or the pieces of the outside of the column are 2 inches thick, and they were locked together, lock joint or something. And it was a patented thing that they had discovered to lock the joints together. And so he was describing that one of the columns had these staves. The other one was a solid piece of tree. And I was like, wait a minute, what?
That had been cored.
That had been cored.
Core a turned.
And so I was like, tree. I've never seen that. And I go, maybe older, but not newer. And so then I go on that building traditional heritage library. And 1906 catalog from this column company, they were coring trees. And whoa. So they would turn and core this tree. That was a 1906 catalog. So he was right. Like that's how they had turned some of these columns. And so that's where that's coming from. It's just like
he was right. My professor was right. That was not me. But that but I really appreciate you calling it out and saying that.
No, he was right. And it was just something like, wait, what? And so then I have to go back to go to those old catalogs and find this stuff and how it was put together and go, oh, okay.
So you just take a solid tree, they drill out the middle.
Mm-hmm. They drilled out the middle.
They put it on a
lathe. Like a ship's auger, and they would just, you know.
Well, I think by the time that catalog was, they were coring it out. He said cored it.
Mm-hmm, he did. Well, you just have to get the hearthwood out.
Right.
Or just some of it, just so it can move.
Well, that was the other thing. I was sitting there going, how, like, if you just take a wet tree and just leave it, it cracks all to hell.
Mm-hmm. So, unless you take the core out.
Well, if you take the core out, then it's drying more evenly, but you'd still have to, I would still think it would crack. But
apparently
maybe
a lot of the expansion, because one of the houses we looked at was the King's Chapel in downtown Boston. And we went up, it's an old timber framed building, but they have these giant columns all throughout. They're fluted and they have a Corinthian piece at the top of them. And each column is a tree, and it runs from the base, the like basement of the building, all the way into the roof of this like giant chapel.
What?
And all they've done is cored the middle of them. They've just drilled them out with augers, like these long, long auger bits. And
how tall? Like 20 feet, 10 feet?
Higher than that.
Where do they get these bits to go that deep?
Well, they do a shell bit or like a... Yeah, they would use shells. Yeah, you would think or that
it would if it starts drifting and starts going out the side.
If it drifts even a little bit, you're out of the tree.
So that's what they were doing. They were running these long holes through the tree because otherwise, if they don't run them through it, the whole thing will split and snap. Right. But apparently, when you do it that way, it's not necessarily about the drying more evenly. It's more about how the expansion and contraction hits. It gives it a breathing room. It gives it like a zone to move in and out of. But they took the whole column, they cut entices into it, they fluted it, and then they carved
what
the Corinthian capital at the top.
It's like in the same
chapel
thing.
On one tree.
Do you have a picture?
I don't, not on me. Austin can pull up a photo of it, but it.
That is it's nutso.
It's the King's Chapel. It's the columns inside of King's Chapel. It's so cool because we're sitting there looking at it, and they all look so uniform. And then we keep looking at it, and we go, what if someone made a mistake? What if you're the carver at the end and you mess something up at the very end?
Bring in a new tree.
Someone's flued it.
Yeah.
Well, you're getting a giant, massive tree. Anyway,
you're getting
have these panels that open up at the base of the columns because essentially if the column sits like this, they've got a box just around it, like a little bit wider than it, and you can open up the door and see the unturned tree
that's just
in there.
That
and
is
you're
just
like,
crazy.
Whoa, this thing's awesome. So they're pretty cool. That one. Yep, that's the building.
You've been there?
Yep. And those are the columns that are so crazy.
Wait, you're saying those interior columns are
those
trees?
Those are trees that go from the base of the building all the way to the roof. Isn't that awesome?
It's incredible.
It's so cool. Anyway.
So, you know, the point of this thing is that how hard it was for us, our company. We've got a carver, we've got millwork operators, we got access to the wood.
Y'all do this full time.
We're classically based. We've got the things, and we still couldn't. I mean, execute it the way you would think.
You did do it eventually, but
eventually,
right?
it was so hard. And I think the reason I wanted to do an episode on this is that we're trying to. We've got pictures. We've got drawings. We've got scale drawings, and we still really struggled to get this thing right.
I have a question. One thing that happens for me is like whenever I do something, like in class when I'm learning it, it takes forever. Like we put together these little like sliding lid boxes. I wanted to make one for Natalie, and so I threw one together, and it came together in like
because you'd already
half
done
an
it?
Hour because I already done it. So do you think there's anything of that too, like where you're in the first phase of building? Like if this
Probably.
Is what you did for your Probably. Living, well, you'd be really quick at it.
I would say 100% because look, now you have something right. tangible in your face to
just
look
go
at.
Do this,
yeah.
Yeah, do this.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then also even the learning curve of like, before I remove the dado stack and then put on a single blade, I'm gonna finish making these cuts, so I'm not yes. putting yeah. on a dado stack, taking it off.
Well, and the other thing is that one of the questions we were asking ourselves, because we did want to reproduce it, is that what? How small does it get before this doesn't show up? This that you start having a tough time doing this, because if you know this thing's this big, you know, then you certainly aren't carving these rosettes, yeah. and you may not carve the brackets. And so
you have some of those mock-up drawings in your office that they're, don't have the detail.
Yeah, they're compo moldings carved by somebody at some point. Because this is really, in my mind, just kind of a tool for learning, tool for training. It's a tool for educating our clients, like we were talking with Pat about, or talking about in our episode, education. And I don't think until a client sees this, are they going to go, oh, wow, that's spectacular. That's beautiful.
That's a beautiful showpiece, too.
It is. And it's just, you know, how else do you, because I could show them that and they'd be like, yeah, that's pretty. But until you see this, you don't really understand, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Right?
Well, yeah. Like one thing I could see that, like an architecture firm, like having that in their right. front reception office right. or whatever, you know, like, right. but I don't think you can go any smaller than what you're at. I
don't think so either.
I think to get the effect of everything, you'll probably hit it perfect with this one as far as scale.
Do you know what'd be cool?
What's that?
If, I mean, you've got a big office, you've got a big space. If you did the five orders, bum, bum, bum. You've got them drawn up over there.
That was where this started in my head.
You started with the hardest one.
And so then you think about the Ionic and like the Doric is done right there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And you've got it's the square column that's back to us, but you've actually got the mutilated, you know, pieces yep. and the triglyphs and everything else in that entablature. And it's spectacular. It's like really special. So we were thinking we do an Ionic one next. This one was so hard. It's just like, crap, I don't know.
What
if I
is, me and Jackson were talking a little bit earlier. What separates Ionic and
composite?
And, yeah, and Corinthian. Like, what makes something composite?
It combines the Corinthian and the Ionic. And so.
Wait, hold on. We said what separates them. You said it combines it.
The composite is a combination of Ionic and Corinthian.
Right, but when does it become that? Because
see this?
Yeah.
That's Corinthian. That's composite. That's Corinthian.
Wait, what? Are you sure?
Yes. Okay. And so you're seeing a greater expression in this. That is the Ionic capital there. It's the Scamozzi version.
Is it
version.
Because they're more scrolled and yes. less leaved?
Yeah, and you have... So if we went back to the Ionic.
I guess the way I was explaining it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, but because I was showing Richard this job that we're working on with the columns.
Right.
And I was like, I think what separates them is the Corinthian is like all leaves. So like these scrolls aren't scrolls anymore. They're leaves. Right. And so, you know, you get these droop things. That's where it's like, now we're in Corinthian zone. But as soon as it's bat like that up there, that's just scrolled, and it's but they're kinked out at an angle. So they're kinked out at an angle there.
I mean, so there's a couple things. There's the Ionic,
mm-hmm.
okay. There's the composite, and there is the Corinthian.
Go back to the Ionic really fast. So the Ionic can be protruded in 4D or in 3D.
So, but remember too that the original, okay, the in the Greek and Roman world, there's really just the...
There's no composite.
I don't know if there's no composite. It's during the Renaissance that they put together the five orders. Mm-hmm. Typically, there's really only three orders, the Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian. And then in the Renaissance, they kind of create the five orders. Mm. And so you're looking at something, you talked about the swags and the different things that happened to it. That really happens in the Renaissance and in a more elevated level later. And so
I think I see what you're saying, though. The scrolls are more pronounced on
the composite.
It's like
there's a double capital. See that break almost right there? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there you got the Ionic capital. Yeah, kind of added to that.
The fluting goes up to there. And then if you go to the Ionic, the fluting goes all the way up to underneath.
It's all in that little capital piece.
This piece right here.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so
the acanthus sleeves only go up to that little mm-hmm. supporting molding
right.
on the Corinthian,
and I would think that there's different authors are going to draw this differently,
interpret it
differently, and so there's that happens with all the orders, that the way Palladius saw it versus the way Chambers saw it versus the way Gibbs saw it was all different.
Hmm.
Anyway, this is a symbol of what we're trying to do as a company, right? This is a symbol of this chasing after the past so that we can build better and learn and craft better. And the exercise of doing this about killed us. But certainly I think everybody learned stuff. I think that, we want to do it again, but now we need to finish this. So Voss is going to carve those elements. I don't know whether we'll finish it, whether we'll put an oil on it, or exactly what we'll do with it. But we are documenting this. We are telling the story because it's important.
Yeah. So I understand it correctly, all that Corinthian section of this, like the leaves, that was all from a solid block,
mm-hmm.
and then he just came in and
mm-hmm.
that's yep. unbelievable.
So it would have had to be
yes.
yay big.
Yep, exactly.
You glued up just a big chunk of
mm-hmm.
walnut.
Yep.
You're just hogging off so much material to get down to here.
I know.
Oh. You go a little too deep.
I don't understand how he can see in his mind like those leaves. Okay, these leaves are layered in front of these.
It's just like Pat was talking about. I think you're training your mind to see in 3D. And mm-hmm. the longer you do it, the more you see it. And the more you kind of go, oh, okay, I see what we're doing there. I think that he's got that brain to where he can look at it and go, well, yeah, that comes out this far. And I think you've got to train your brain. Most of our clients cannot see in 3D. That's why I draw so many pictures. And, their brain hasn't been trained that way. Mm-hmm. So learning to see three-dimensionally, I mean, it's like what Michelangelo could do. I mean, when he talks about carving the David.
Michelangelo.
I've even shown the people like the molding pieces, and they're like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like the side profile.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you say about Michelangelo? I cut you off.
When about he talks the David? About seeing the David inside the marble.
Yeah,
he
was something about releasing what was inside.
I don't carve David into the marble. I am releasing. Carving the marble away from David.
Yeah.
So it's like David's just trapped inside that block of marble. I'm carving him out of it.
Did you see that one? I think it was him. It was like that veiled. It's like a lady with the veil on, and like it looks like this, like
all
draping,
like
the
drapes. Yeah, yeah, he's crazy. He wrote this book. No, there's a book written about him called The Agony and the Ecstasy. It takes a lot of liberties, but it really does a good job of explaining what his ideas were and like how he saw everything. And he was just very passionate about his craft. People kept wanting him to be an architect. People kept wanting him to be a wood carver. People kept wanting him to be an engineer. And some guy, some Pope was like, you're going to build me this. You're going to build this thing out of wood, a thing out of gold. You're going to cast it out of bronze. And he was like, this is not my craft. And he like got really mad at him. It was really funny.
We should have him on.
I know.
Wouldn't that be a crazy?
Yeah, he'd be a great guest.
Yeah, talk to us about craft. Do you think craft is dead?
Oh, you're dead. Oh. All
right. Yeah.
He just speaks Italian the whole time. We're like, okay, well, bad.
I think the example of this, right, is in, like you were just talking about moldings, right? And just putting up a classical cornice, okay? where you, instead of just having one single mold and you have a Sima and a Corona and a bed mold, I'm trying to teach that right now to a client and just saying, you can't, and she's in San Francisco. And I was like, they people want to put up a big 5-inch crown. Okay. And the historical way, and they found one room that has the historical way. This was a 1898 house, so right around the turn of the century. And they had the crown in the room broken up like this, four parts, Sima, Corona, little soffit, and then a bed mold. And I was like, that's the original one right there. And they're like, oh, okay. So we were able to then step back and use that as the basis for the rest of the house. That's essentially what this is as an exercise in doing, is like identifying the past, looking at it, and then copying it. Because then now they're taking that precedent and they're applying it to the rest of the house because we know how they used to build. And so—
Is that a Victorian San Francisco?
It's kind of, yes. It's late Victorian, kind of early classical.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a, you know, that this in a nutshell explains what we're trying to do and how hard it is.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Like to see that thing.
It's cool.
You said it's 25% scaled down?
It can't be. Because half would be. So there's probably,
are you sure it's not?
Well, I was just going to do
it
the
probably
math.
Probably is.
Let's just say it's 20 foot tall. Half would be 10. Another half would be 5. Another half would be 2. Yeah. So it is probably about 25%.
That's a fun project. I would love to see the
can't
full
wait till
walls.
It's finished.
You know that like image, if you like Google the five orders of architecture, you know,
it's on a
that
building
image
it's
that pops
building
up.
In it's a building in Oxford.
Someone
it's,
has a building it, of it?
Yeah, it's actually right around the corner from this. It's the five orders expressed on these things. And so you start with the Tuscan,
Doric,
yeah. Ionic, Corinthian, and Composite.
Oh,
it's way at the top.
This exists?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I think
that.
It's the Tower of the Five Orders or something like that.
Cool.
It's at Oxford.
I bet that's awesome.
That's great.
It is helpful to see them side by side too and compare and contrast them, because it's also so funny because I think growing up, we got taught that by you on a field trip, calling them field trips to family vacations. But when we went to like Washington, D.C., I think to meet up with Christine Frank for something, whatever, right. We were visiting. Something. I think my dad realized, oh, I haven't really taught him anything. I got to teach him this. But he did. He taught us, like, look at that building. What is it? What order is that building? Look at that building. What order is
You're
that
like,
building?
Dad, can we just go to the beach? We're going to the beach today.
You know how engaging and exciting and everything he is. We were all, like, really excited about it. And me, Gigi, and Harriet were all, like, competing against each other. Be like, that one's Ionic. And, you know, we're all eager to figure it out.
Yeah.
But you, like, I've known it for a while, I guess is my point. And I even look at it and I'm like, okay, yeah, that one's that, that one's that, that one's that. But now we three right here today are looking at this pattern book and it's like, oh, I've never noticed that Corinthians, you know, fluted thing would have to only stop here so that there has to be a thing here. And then we're seeing the composite order and the composite actually has a break right, you know, right here, right where the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
Or like we're seeing an example of a composite that does that. And so it's just like, hey, there's like very visible side by side things that like, I, even though I know the order and I probably know it better than most people, I didn't even recognize that. You know what I mean?
Do you want to see something interesting I just realized?
Yeah.
I think this is much cooler.
Yeah. For size wise.
Not only size wise, but like, I don't think that's as dramatic as this. And although there's carved,
Greek revival?
What style is that?
I mean, it's Doric.
Right.
But.
Well, and in that order, the Doric order, the frieze is larger because you have triglyphs in there. But, I mean, you've got a fluted column. You've got carving in the torus at the base, kind of a bundled reed torus base. You got egg and dart. But why isn't that one as cool as this one? I don't think it is. Anyway, it's just, you know, here's, now I'm realizing that in my career, we've actually done this more than once. We're reproducing the past a lot to help people understand it. But we've had this in my office for 10 or 12 years. And I think I'm going to sell more jobs with this thing than I am with that thing.
I think that thing too is helpful because you see the full surround of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like this would help. like, this is more true to the pattern book, but even though this would be supporting a structure that goes out to here and that's visually seen.
If that was round like this, it would probably be better, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think definitely.
Do you like, you prefer columns or pilasters? I mean, it's not really a, because pilasters and columns work together.
Yeah. Here's basically an exercise we've been practicing. You know, I'd like to point out that pediment behind us was sent to us by, you know, someone who had watched my video on building a pediment and basically did that. And there's another, if you guys want a starter project of how to build something, that pediment is a great one because you get into the split fillet, you get into building those parts and pieces, and it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. And cutting those moldings and cutting those things so that you get the raking moldings and everything else, it's hard.
I think I'll start with this. Were you saying you don't like that one? Are you saying you don't like the Doric order, or you don't like that sample that y'all made?
I liked it. I've always liked that. But I've shown that to a lot of people, and I kind of get a meh. And I don't think I'm going to get a meh from people on this.
I think what's hard.
I think if we built that Doric order like this, I think it would be more dramatic and it'd be more interesting.
If they say meh to that, you need to give him that DR Horton shirt he was wearing earlier. And say, get out.
I think one of the things that helps, that hurts this one's case, you're forced to imagine so much. On this side, you know, like that's where you have to be like, oh, I'm imagining the rest of my house being built here. You still have to do that here, but it feels complete, which I feel like what helps people see
it's it's the whole column and entablature.
Because even though it's like you would need to imagine that extending and then cutting off, because you've done it by reduction instead of by addition, like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
you know, it does. I guess I'm sitting here thinking as we're doing this that maybe we do need to, because I told everybody, no, we're not doing any more of these.
Did everyone want to do another?
Yeah, because and
it'd be cool to make them the same size.
Yeah, I agree.
All the same size.
Well, they wouldn't all be the same size, right? They'd be.
No, you'd have it be proportional. So the Ionic order, the column would be a little bit bigger.
Right.
Here.
Well, they'd be shorter too. Corinthian's the tallest. Because Doric is short and squat.
No, what would happen is if they're all, let's say they're all 20 feet tall, okay, the Corinthian order would be
fatter.
No, Corinthian thinner. Order would be thinner and longer and like a gangly girl. The Doric order would be strong and fat and hefty. And so I think we look at them as if they're taller, but they're really not. It's just the proportions of the orders change. And so the proportions of this, if they're all the same tall, would change.
That
so
just that this, clicked in my head.
So that this is.
Know. Yeah, because if you have a 20 foot like portico or whatever, you could plug in any order.
Yeah,
in the order,
I didn't even think
it would
about
just
that.
Change.
Yeah, and the proportions would change.
Why do they draw it in that one book? Like,
I know.
You know that
smaller
image?
Yeah,
smaller
bigger.
And bigger.
It's a very deceiving image. It really
they
is.
They must just have the same width column, but dang it, that doesn't help. It would be better if they're all the same size. You would see a lot more.
You know, Gary Katz on his
This is Carpentry. Yeah.
He's got one explaining the orders where one of his guys does that.
Yeah.
And actually, it was the first time, it's probably been 10 years since I looked at it. But he's like they're drawn smaller, but they're really not. It's the proportions of the pieces.
Gary Katz put out so much stuff that was so good that has been like lost to the YouTube algorithm, I feel like, because some of it is still in there. But
yeah,
This is Carpentry. That taught me stereotomy.
Is Carpentry is probably the greatest carpentry website. I mean, for modern day, like applicable knowledge that you can use on your job,
he nailed it. I remember working with Gary when he was coming up with the concept that instead of writing for other magazines, he was going to write his own magazine. That's where This is Carpentry came from. And so
it explained those concepts really well. Like, it explained the stereotomy concept really, really well, which it, he didn't call it stereotomy. He didn't know what it was that he was doing, but or he maybe did, but it wasn't explained that way.
I don't think people are familiar with that term until Pat started doing that.
Yeah.
And he's made it so wide, well known. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
Is what would you do next after Corinthian?
Would you drop down to Ionic?
Yeah. So
or composite?
There's not a ton of carving in the Ionic. In the Doric. I say that, but let's see what one of these high-end guys does. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of carving there.
There's not a lot, except for all the places where it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So would you do the triglyph with
it's,
the
It's got
gutte.
Yeah.
We definitely do the triglyph, probably do carving in that bed mold.
Would you do it in here?
I think so.
What are those dots called?
Well, I think they're also still the gutte. I think.
That's the bottom of the gutte.
Yeah. No, it's the bottom of the mutual. It's that piece that comes out up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first one we were going to do was the Ionic.
Just work your way down?
Just work your way down.
Yeah, you start at the hardest one and
let,
work down.
You know, that's obviously the hardest one to get through, and then we do the Ionic, and then we do the Doric.
No Tuscan, no composite?
I don't think so.
Tuscan is no carvings, right?
It's the simplest.
Tuscan, you're just...
It'll be interesting.
Just building moldings, right?
Yeah, so they've got no carvings in the Tuscan.
And
it looks good, though.
Like, it does have a base, awesome. Right?
It's so clean. Like if,
go ahead. You, sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, if you have people who are like, oh, I don't like all this ornate stuff, like you can still...
Let's introduce the proportions. You don't need to show the carvings. And, yeah, it's great. The Greek Doric has no base.
But the tradition, like, Doric, as a style, has a base, right?
Roman Doric does. Greek Doric doesn't.
So the older does not.
Yeah.
The newer does.
I think there are some Greek Doric temples in Greece that have a base.
Yeah.
Right? And so these are not hard and fast rules. You can never have a base.
That's what someone told me.
But the Greek Revival style that you see in the 1840s and 50s in America oftentimes did not have a base.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really handsome, strong thing when it doesn't. Mm-hmm. When that column goes down and sits right down on the floor, I think it to me is more country. It's strong visually.
Does it still have a plinth though?
No.
Did the fluting go directly into the floor?
That's a good question. I'd need to look and see.
Cool.
I think it's a great look when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll do more of these. I'm fine. It's like
did we convince you?
Yes, you actually is one of those things that it's been so painful. When I did the TV show,
oh yeah,
it was just like such a grind to get through. I'll never do this again. And then 6 months later, you go, okay, I'll try one more time. That's the way I feel about this. It's just
Did you make all those knives like for the?
We ended up making all the custom knives, make all that.
Yeah, because it's hard. There's not a lot of molding knives that are this tiny.
No.
That's what I've been dealing with my pediment. I'm having to do stuff by hand.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's a masterpiece.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
Like a literal masterpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Have you ever had to make a masterpiece?
Nope.
What was that thing that you built, the flame? Wasn't that a masterpiece of sorts?
That was I have a lot of pet projects, Jackson. when I started, actually, that's how my career with Vossel started, you know, is that I was like, I wonder why we can't make these beautiful things like they used to make. And so why don't we do these urns and these things that used to be so common in historic houses as a decorative item? And so I found in an old pattern book some urns and with this eternal flame. And at the same time, Vossel had reached out to me on Facebook and said, hey, do you want to work together? And sent pictures from some of his stuff. And that started the relationship.
Went to Ukraine, right?
Yeah, I sent some urns over there by FedEx. And it was just like took 3 weeks or longer to even get there. He mailed them back. And it took like 2 days. I was like, what is going on? But he had carved these things up. He'd just done it, carved it up. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to go visit this guy. So then I went over to Kyiv and met him. Small little shop. You know, his carving studio was this big. It was, you know, 12 by 10. we just started a relationship. And then what the long, it took, the longest thing it took was finding a lawyer who could help us, because you can't do an H-1 visa. It's just too common. And so we had to go for the O-1, which is the ballerinas and hockey players get, unusual talent. We had to get him published. He had to win awards. He had to get some stuff like that so that we could get the O-1 visa. It took about two or three years. But
very talented.
Yeah. And we're getting more and more work for him now. And he's talked about even having some other carvers we could bring over. And so if we could get a stable of three or four carvers like that, that would be because what happens now is a big job comes up and we're just, you know, waiting for him to work through it.
Would you ever try and get him apprentices?
Yeah, the problem is, and I go back to that story that Ian Agrell, that English carver, tells,
yeah,
where he went to, you know, San Francisco and wanted to set up a carving shop.
Yeah.
And that American's attitude was just too, I'm not feeling, you know, creative today. I don't think I can do it. And he ended up going back to Pakistan, where there's just more of a working
mindset.
And he basically took those carvers and trained them to be classical carvers to do his studio.
They do a lot of carving work in India and Pakistan.
Yeah. I mean, and even in Eastern Europe. I mean, mm-hmm. Vossel was doing a lot of carving for a lot of different things. We went and visited some of these projects, and you're like, this house? They're carving in this house? Mm-hmm. Very simple, ordinary houses. Yeah. Some of them were nicer, but some of them were not. And so you're just like, wow, this is interesting. Carving is much more accessible to them.
Do you think they've got an abundance of carvable wood, like abundance of beech or abundance of
basswood? I think it's talent.
Basswood?
It's not the species. They have carvers there.
Do you think it's also their tradition?
Yeah, an Eastern Orthodox church is those churches are, I mean, carve mania. Mm-hmm. And so there's a high ideal put up there. And so he was making beds and he was doing all kinds of carving all over the house, stair rails, all these different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you come to the U.S. and there's just not as much effusive carving as there was in kind of that Russian oligarchy kind of world of Eastern Orthodox thinking. And so, you know, he's had to do more stuff like this.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Hope that was interesting. I think it's cool. A lot of lessons.
Very cool.
A lot of lessons.
I think it's cool too. Didn't learn any lessons. thanks for watching. We'll see you in the next one.